This is the Experience Points Podcast, E3 2012 edition, day two.
How are you feeling? Are you holding
up? I think I'm okay.
Yeah?
Well, my sanity is holding on by a thread.
So Scott and I got up really early this morning, so I'm absolutely exhausted.
We had to do important things like fight the Los Angeles traffic.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably the hardest mission of all, right?
Well, we'll see once we talk about Call of Duty.
So today we saw a huge amount of things. We had many different appointments, and we're going to get to all of that stuff. We're not going to spend too long on any one thing because, one, there's a lot to talk about. Two, I'm really tired. And three, there's only so much space in Libsyn, so we've got to keep in mind our capacity. We want to get you a day three talk. And then, of course, next week, we want to do a much longer wrap-up when we're less tired and we have some time to think about actually what we saw with a bit more critical eye.
Right.
So today we're going to do some heavy hitters. We got LucasArts coming up and Activision and Bethesda and Square Enix and some Wii U games and some indie games and all that. But first, we forgot to talk about natural selection last week.
This one's for you, Jason Horton.
Yeah, we had a listener kindly say, what was the deal? We forgot to talk about natural selection, which is a real shame because I really wanted to talk about it.
Right.
I'm actually writing a quick piece that should be up on Pop Matters today, by the time you're listening to this, about natural selection. And I'm hoping to look at the game again after release. It's something that I'm relatively excited about, to be honest.
Yeah.
I played a decent amount of Natural Selection 1, and we had a really good chat with Charlie Cleveland, who's the founder and game director at Unknown Worlds, as well as Hugh Jeremy, who's, I guess, an advocate slash community manager over there. And it was really nice to get some time to sit and just chit-chat about the game, especially considering you and I weren't going in for the sound bites. We were going because we were, you know, generally curious.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's rare to get a chunk of time, especially because the show floor is crowded, people's appointment calendars are really crowded, but we had a really good chat with them about how to create what started off as basically a mod, turned it into their fully, you know, fully independent, their own engine, trying to really expand the community to almost to esport status.
Yeah, they're aiming for esports. They do competitive events now, apparently. I wasn't aware.
Oh, wait, what is Natural Selection for people who don't know?
So Natural Selection is based off of a game that came out in 2002 that's actually a Half-Life mod, and it pits a team of Marines against a team of aliens. Sounds traditional, right? The twist, of course, is that it's actually a sort of pseudo-real-time strategy game going on as well.
Yeah.
The Marines are pushing forward and claiming certain resource points. The more resources you get, you can upgrade weapons, you can upgrade armor, you could build yourself suits or buy med packs, that kind of thing, set up turrets and radar, all sorts of neat stuff. The person who's actually doing all of that, though, is a commander. One player on the Marine team literally doesn't do anything the other members do. They watch the entire battle from above with a top-down point of view and control the way that the game is progressed. They give orders to their squads. They ask people to do certain tasks. The aliens, however, evolve on their own, and they grow into different types of creatures that are a bit more deadly and play in a very different way. They don't have any ranged except for, I believe, the Gorge.
And the Gorge was the support class.
Yeah, it's like the support class.
You could build structures or build turrets and so forth.
So in some way, it's the same in that they both have a central area that they want to defend, either the command station or the hive. However, actually playing as an alien feels very different. In the first Natural Selection, there wasn't a commander. In Natural Selection 2, there is an alien commander. And there's all sorts of really cool, nifty abilities that you can read about more at your leisure.
Yeah.
The important point, I think, to make here is that not much has really changed about Natural Selection in theory, but I feel like so much has changed about the type of space that the game is entering in and the expectations we all have.
Yeah.
Because this is like 10 years in the making. This is crazy.
Right, right. And so as someone who played the first Natural Selection, is there something specific that jumped out at you as to what we were able to play and what we were able to talk about?
I was actually genuinely surprised how similar it felt. Natural Selection does this thing that just no other shooters that I'm aware of do, and that is put you in a place where you feel as though you're fulfilling a role within an ordered structure, like you're part of a team.
Right.
Almost in a sort of class-based shooter way.
A lot of people have squads, but they don't necessarily function as squads. They function as individuals who tend to be, like, bureaucratically grouped.
Right, you know? Or you'll be the medic class, and someone will be the anti-tank class.
Right.
But you're both You're both humanoid. You're both running around. You both have a reticle. You can always switch to a pistol no matter what class you are.
Yeah.
Playing as a Fade in Natural Selection, you're blinking around the battle. You're moving super fast.
Mm-hmm.
Playing as the flying alien, you're zooming around. You're throwing out toxic clouds.
You can, like, roost on the ceiling.
Yeah. Playing as a Skulk, you're in pipes and you're hiding in different positions and skittering around. It feels very different, but nevertheless feels like a cohesive whole.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as an outsider, someone who didn't play the first game and who is coming into the second game fresh, I think they will have to work really hard if they want to radically expand their community, because it's a game that you really have to learn how to play. You can't just hop in and think things will go all right.
Yeah.
And if they want a huge, you know, Dota-esque community out there doing tournaments that's bigger than just the people who are in Natural Selection 1, then we'll have to see how welcoming the community is, and B, if they want to at all integrate any learning or tutorial sections into the game itself, because it doesn't sound like they're that interested in that.
Yeah, and I agree, and it's really interesting because, you know, Natural Selection was just a mod. You had to download it. You have to have interest in it in the first place.
Yeah.
Natural Selection 2, like you said, is aiming for a much wider audience, and the fact is the esports space is already full. Like, people are still playing Counter-Strike,
yep.
but they're also playing StarCraft and League of Legends,
yep.
and Dota 2, and, you know, what's that new one? Shoot Mania, you know, who knows? Maybe PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. Like, the space is loaded, and there are expectations about balance quality. There are expectations about, you know, DLC and how often you're going to be changing the game and types of patches. And it just feels like the expectations that we have now for that shooter genre is so different than what it was in 2002.
Yep.
That
yep. And people just have a lot of different options too.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, there's readability issues and accessibility issues that are way bigger of a concern these days when you don't have to just play. This isn't your only option for a non-normative shooter.
Yeah.
There are plenty of other options. Why go to Natural Selection? I believe it's something, they offer something that's still really unique.
Right.
But they're going to have to sell that point and market it in a way that is, you know, poking their heads out of what is right now a pretty large crowd.
Yep, definitely. And I mean, like you said, you'll have more stuff on this later on. So for more detailed information, you know, check back Pop Matters. We'll be digging into it a little bit more. Plus, they're local, so we might actually run into them in the Bay Area.
Yeah,
now that we know that. Okay, so now we're getting to the actual
day two.
Start off in the morning, I guess.
Yeah.
We went to the folks at Lucas and saw Star Wars 1313.
Yeah, so this is the first of the Uncharted games, right? You were going to say it.
LucasArts is getting into Uncharted territory with this.
Oh, I see what you did there.
So this is an action-adventure game set in the Star Wars universe. I'm not sure if it's prequel or post New Hope or, you know, what it is.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question.
I couldn't really tell by the architecture or anything. So
I mean, they're on Coruscant, but Coruscant's been a major city for a long time. It's not Old Republic. We know that.
Right. But this is... And the way that the developers pitched it was that it is... They used the word mature like 3 times.
Yeah.
It is a dark, you know, dark stories, shades of gray. It's about a young bounty hunter who started off the demo that we saw with kind of a more veteran bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And, you know, bounty hunters are shady folks.
Yeah.
they're going to get into some hijinks down there.
Yeah, they're living in wretched hives of scum and villainy and doing their thing.
Apparently, Coruscant goes down for, like, over 2,000 levels into the planet, and that's what 1313 comes from.
I buy that. I don't know how it's structurally sound, but sure.
Whatever. Well, they said that there was no... There are no Jedi and no Force, so you know it has to be man-made structures. Yeah. There's no Force.
That's
there's no
true.
Force keeping it up.
You know, I'm curious, when they said that, were you happy about that?
I mean...
Because some people associate Star Wars with Jedi. That's it.
Well, I mean, the defining element of Star Wars is the Force.
Yeah.
But then again, the Force is notorious for being hard to get right in a video game.
Yeah.
I mean, Force Unleashed tried to do it. It was okay, but the Force shouldn't act like MP, because that's not how it works in the movie.
Right.
But if you have unlimited Force in a game, you don't have much of a challenge.
Right.
So it's like this constant battle. And so they solved it by just making it about bounty hunters, like, which has now become a huge part of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm glad that they're going this mature route, and they are veering away from the Force stuff, because I think that, you know, both you and I think it's safe to say we're both fans of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really cool and interesting stories. And for the most part, LucasArts has covered the same stuff.
Yeah.
Especially recently. They're sticking pretty close with the Clone Wars through Episode 6 material.
Yep.
And so it's really nice to see someone, or see LucasArts for that matter, say, we're going to go mature. We're going to do something that is a little bit different. And that's fine. I think that's totally okay. And it's way past due.
Yeah. I mean, As you would guess, a game that has the resources of Industrial Light and Magic and LucasArts behind it looks great.
Yeah.
They're doing similar technology that Naughty Dog does, motion capturing people's bodies and faces and shooting them as a scene rather than in sound booths.
Yeah. And I don't think I can stress this enough from what we saw, but I think having the power of ILM behind you is huge.
Yep.
Like, these people know what they are doing. Yep. The facial animation, I thought, looked fantastic. And not just that, like, even if they didn't show us anything, if they just said, hey, we have a really close partnership with ILM, they get cred, because that's a team that not only is amazing at what they do, there's a reason they're the most used special effects.
Right, the most sought after. I mean, more people would use them if they were cheap enough to use.
Exactly.
You know, like, if you can afford ILM, you go ILM.
If you can think of any major blockbuster within the past 5 years, it was probably produced with help from ILM or whatever.
Over the past 30 years.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane.
Yeah.
Add on to the fact that they know Star Wars and the universe of Star Wars, that, you know, I don't know if this game is going to be good. I don't know if it's going to be super Uncharted-ish, but I think it's going to adhere well to the Star Wars universe, and I think it's going to look fantastic.
But, I mean, like, we should stress this not because we're trying to be reductive, but that it's so striking how influential Uncharted 2 was.
Yes.
Because, like, in the demo, like, it's cover-based shooter over the shoulder, then an action sequence happens, and the bounty hunter is, like, hanging on by one arm as a spaceship plummets to the ground of Coruscant.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can see how that action system works, because the valid jumps for you to make are slightly, like, yellowish or reddish colored.
Yeah.
And the character model will kind of reach his hand out to cue you that is a correct jump to make.
Yeah.
Like, it is exactly what Naughty Dog did. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, I mean, LucasArts, I'm sure, is giving it their own spin, but we're still seeing the fallout from Uncharted 2, like, all across the industry.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just striking to see.
It's funny, because I think listeners of the show may remember that, you know, what, like, 2 years ago or so, I don't even know what game we were talking about, but we were basically saying this game would not exist if it were not for Uncharted.
Yeah.
And I think now we're getting to the point where a lot of games would not exist the way they do were it not for Uncharted.
Yeah, and games take so long to make that we'll see this for the next year or two.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. It's the first Star Wars game in a long time that I am actually interested in.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Another big one. Blops.
COD Blops. Dose.
So, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. How satisfying was it to see a destroyed Los Angeles freeway after having to sit on it for, like, an hour every day?
I'll give you that. It was the first time I was thinking, wow, it might actually be more chaotic outside than inside.
What do we say about...
I mean, what is there?
I think I liked it more than you did, actually.
You did? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, again, I was tired.
Yeah.
That being said, there's so much going on in these games. Like, there's just... there's a cacophony of noise.
Right.
And vision, like, the UI is flooded with random messages that mean nothing to you.
People are screaming into the radio.
Like there's commanders being like, "We've got," and then they'll name a bunch of military terms that I'm not aware of, and you're probably not aware of, and they're yelling at you to do things, and then you see one little thing of information. Like, case in point, there's a scene when the main character in the demo we saw gets into a jet and flies around. That is almost certainly an on-rails shooting scene.
I don't know about that.
You think they were actually controlling the jet?
They showed, like, bumper and, like, acceleration and deceleration things.
Yeah, but, I mean...
Like, here's the thing. Like, it looks like it took a lot of stuff from Black Ops and also from Modern Warfare 3. Because, remember, you controlled the boats in Black Ops.
Yeah, but,
like,
I mean...
What the planes looked like to me were the boat controls in the air.
But I think it seemed to me more like you can lean left and right. But that's not really... You're not really picking which building to go around or dodge.
I'm pretty sure... I don't know. I'm confident that you'll be able to do that.
Maybe.
I mean, like, I really do think it's a different skin, obviously, yeah. And it's like a different context because you're in a modern war, a future warfare environment.
Yeah, 2025.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
But it seems like they're integrating a lot of lessons they've been learning and then adding on a little bit of new stuff.
Yeah, you know? I mean, for me, I just felt bored during the experience and a little bit nauseous.
Right.
And there was a moment where I got a little bit excited because the person running through the demo was describing a new mode called Overwatch mode.
Yeah.
Which lets you take a bird's eye view of the battle and go into any of the allied units,
yeah.
from drones to like robotic dog things,
yeah.
to people,
yeah.
On the map whenever you want. And that sounded like a really cool and clever idea. And he actually described it as a open world sort of sandbox.
Right.
His exact words, yeah. were sandbox.
Yeah.
And when the game actually started, it was basically a multiplayer capture point. It's
right.
cool that you can go into this aerial view and lead battle from a different perspective,
mm-hmm.
but it seemed like it wasn't quite enough.
Mm.
And I feel like, you know, on the show floor today, we saw so many shooters,
right.
so many military shooters in particular,
yep.
that I have a hard time believing. I mean, maybe this is probably me being a little bit idealistic, but I have a hard time believing that Call of Duty can keep doing what they're doing without more drastic changes. And I think Overwatch is a hint at that they get it,
mm-hmm.
that they know that there's growing fatigue.
Right. Well, I mean, the other things... I don't know. Like I'm strangely optimistic about this game because, you know, they showed you being able to paint targets and send in drones. They showed. Did you catch that point where you could either rappel or take a sniping position? Like there's branching positions.
Yeah,
in
I love that.
In the. It's like they're taking a look at the linear aspect of their game. And there's also like...
And making... Okay, but so what you're saying is they're looking at the linear aspect and saying, let's just make two lines instead of one.
Well, what they were saying is you can actually fail missions now, and that will not get you to a game over screen. That will get you to a branching path of the story.
You can fail Overwatch missions, which are not the main storylines.
Yeah, but they affect the main storylines.
Yeah, I dig that. But again, I feel like that's a small departure from the norm in order to...
The idea that a Call of Duty game can have two endings is huge.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah,
like, yeah, I mean, and like, the amount of, like, I don't know, I just feel like everyone rags on Call of Duty a lot.
Yeah.
Right? And I mean, and, you know, for good reason most of the time. But, I mean, I don't know, like, this looks like, this is the first time in a long time where I feel like they're really taking an honest look at what people criticize about Call of Duty. From a systems perspective, not a narrative perspective. Let's get this straight. And taking steps to address it.
But don't you think it's because they feel like they have to? Like they're running out of time?
I mean, sure, you should have to. I mean, they've coasted like far longer than most studios would get away with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a couple of your characters will die.
Yeah.
But that trick has grown very long in the tooth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Out of all the games that we saw today, like, this is probably the game that I will for sure play.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I'll play a bunch of... I will end up playing a bunch of the other ones, but I feel like this is...
You had to decide. It's, like one game.
Like, this is, like, a key turning point as to... I feel like this is a key turning point as to what will happen to Call of Duty in the future.
Yeah.
If this game does well, then, you know, we'll be seeing Call of Duty for, you know, a lot longer.
Yeah.
But if this starts to tank... then they have much, much bigger problems. Because this is actually something new.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, well, we're running out of time.
Yeah, we are.
And
running
we've got
out
so
time.
Many games.
Yeah.
So let's quickly move on. Transformers Fall of Cybertron, we saw.
Hey, yo, you like Transformers?
I
like Transformers.
I mean, I like the idea of Transformers.
Well, then you'll like the idea of this game, because there's Transformers in it.
And, you know, I was intrigued by the War on Cybertron game, which was actually relatively well-received for a multiplayer
yeah.
game. And I think Fall of Cybertron stands the same reason. It's
yeah.
fun to turn into a dinosaur or a jet or a car and then shoot laser beams from your car.
It's also fun to see Nolan North as a robot turn into another different robot that can fly.
Jazz.
I mean, yeah.
He's playing jazz. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's move on from that.
Let's move on.
Dinobots.
Bethesda, that's a big one.
Elder Scrolls Online.
Man. I really don't like being a hater.
Okay, but we should say...
I kind of do like being a hater.
You know, I promised, to try to avoid snark.
Right.
Too much snark.
Right.
But
this is not snark. This
is
legitimate
snark. This
is legit. Worry.
It did not look very good. And there was a point when the presenter said, we've been working on this game for 5 years.
Right.
And I think there was like an audible pall over the room.
There was an audible...
Yeah, where people came to realize, like, 5 years and this is what we see.
Right. Gosh, I mean, the reason why it looks like WoW is because it started being made when WoW was, like, WoW is still an unstoppable juggernaut, but WoW ruled the world there for a while.
And I'm sure you caught it, but at the end, they said, we really want everybody to play this game, so we're making sure you can play it on low-end systems.
Like, five-year-old machines, they say, like, you can play it.
That's, I mean...
And it shows, though. It shows.
Oh, definitely. Like, that came to me off like an excuse, because he knows that's what we're all thinking.
And I don't know what it is about MMOs, but they're so, like, the architecture in them... It looks like a dollhouse rather than an actual place that people would be in.
Yeah.
Something about the proportions and the scale are kind of weird. And when you're thinking about the Elder Scrolls games, which are much different than that, you know, they're rooted in... They always try to go for a more one-to-one realistic way of portraying things.
Right.
When you see someone doing that stupid WoW jump, like where he jumped, like he kind of bounds into battle, like, you know, jumping two times his height.
Yeah.
It's like that ending... They ended with a huge sequence of like a major fight between multiple factions.
Yeah, and everyone has their silly run into battle.
And it just looked like a Leroy Jenkins thing. And it's like, man, I don't know about all this, guys. Right.
It looks like people are, like, you're playing with toys instead of a world, a fleshed out real world.
Especially since the last time we got something from Bethesda was Skyrim.
Yeah.
And everything in that game felt like it had weight.
Well, and, you know, one of the crazy things, too, is, and, you know, I've written about this, the MMO genre is flooded right now with things that are ripping off of the same formula. And there was a moment when in the video that they were showing, he was talking about the new quote-unquote adventure system,
right,
which says, oh, well, you might be on a mission, but then you'll see something on your map that says, hey, why don't you go check out over here, and maybe they'll help you out, and you could do this mission, but you don't have to.
Right
That's not different than a big exclamation mark over someone's head. It's just a bigger exclamation mark.
It was so frustrating that there was no narrative justification for that. Because what are Elder Scrolls games if not narrative justified quests?
Right.
You know?
And it's so funny because when you think of something like Skyrim or any of the Elder Scrolls games,
right,
it's about exploring, and then you bump into something and then you do it because you want to do it.
Not because it gets added to your map randomly.
Right. Like, you know? You can't bump into it. You're just within proximity and now you get a notice. It's like getting an email that says, hey, Def Leppard is playing next door.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's really worrisome to see this after 5 years and what will happen to it when it launches.
Especially when, you know, we have Rift, which does weird things with in-world quests and large boss fights, excuse me. And we have Terra now that does action MMOs and does the sort of, you know, playing around in combat. And this feels like it falls short by a large margin from all of those.
And we have Star Wars The Old Republic that is already giving out its first 20 levels or whatever free to play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, if Star Wars is having not the greatest time making a run at it, it's hard to imagine what franchise can make it.
Yeah. You know? I would be nervous.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. Other new franchises.
Moving on.
Dishonored.
So I'd actually already seen a presentation of basically the same walkthrough today.
Mm.
There were some slight changes, and the slight changes were significant enough. And here we go again, talking about this experience as though our listeners know what we're talking about.
Right.
Dishonored is a game by Arkane Studios. It's heavily influenced, clearly, by games like Thief and Bioshock.
Harvey Smith works on it, who worked on those games as well.
Right. Yeah. And it follows a character by the name of Corvo, who has to infiltrate various things and assassinate people, potentially. You could choose to play incredibly stealthily, even going so far as not killing anyone in the entire game.
Right.
Or you could go in there, guns blazing, powers like summoning rats and freezing time and blowing wind to just kill your enemies.
You have supernatural powers.
Right.
It is very similar to how the powers work in Bioshock.
Plasmids, it's like plasmids.
So that was an interesting presentation, but the better part of it was we were actually able to play it afterwards.
Right.
Go ahead. Tell folks what you thought about it.
You know, this is one of the games that I think I'm most excited about from E3. Like, you were saying COD Blops is your absolute play. I think this is my absolute play, both from what I saw earlier and this current playthrough. And as I was saying, the way that he entered this manor in this playthrough that we watched was different than the one we had seen earlier.
Well, and the way that each of us entered the manor that we were trying to assassinate a guy in was different from either of us,
right? Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. And it felt, especially to me, where, you know, I'm not great at these games. I'm only just now playing Thief, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And already, just taking controls, it felt really fluid and it made sense to me. And I quickly found myself blinking around the map and hiding in shadows and finding ways naturally and I guess emergently, into the locations that I needed to be at. And already, within 5 minutes, I was creating scenes that I thought were really cool and are the types of experiences that I would say, hey, check out this story that happened to me. I made that happen because of the decisions that I made.
Right. I mean, I had a similar yet less smooth interaction, I guess. I mean, I feel like the way that they handle the projectile weapons and the powers is all mapped to the left trigger, which means you need to bring up the radial menu with the left bumper, which made the game kind of start and stop a lot for me because it freezes everything. So it felt a little, you know, it took me out of it a little bit when I was always having to pause and mix things up. It forced me into using the same power a lot because I just didn't want to break the flow of the game.
Right.
And there's also some things about the stealth genre in particular that we should talk about on another podcast.
Yeah.
Well,
I think we should, you know, we'll save it for another podcast.
Yeah.
But maybe we should bring in, you know, some outside help to talk about the stealth genre in particular.
Yeah, you keep your ears open, Justin.
Yeah.
And no one else. Yeah. Right. Okay, so Square Enix, we'll probably talk about Tomb Raider another podcast because it's a huge deal. And there's a lot of opinions about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know we've talked about Tomb Raider before, actually.
Well, I mean, you and I have had a lot of conversations. Yeah. I mean, even at E3, there's a lot of issue with Tomb Raider's marketing campaign.
Yep.
And how the game, whether or not the marketing is a success or whether or not it's indicative of the game at large and the industry at large. And there's a lot of depth to that conversation. And one, we don't have the time here. And two, I'm not even fully decided on it. And I think
you know,
this is a conversation.
Well, we probably won't be until the game actually comes out. I mean, like Call of Duty, I'm somewhat interested in playing this game from an almost academic perspective.
100%,
like,
yes.
If Call of Duty, I'm interested because whether Call of Duty is good or not, it will be a very important fork in the road for that series. This will be a very important fork in the road for Lara Croft.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That being said, let's move on to Quantic Conundrum, Kim Swift's downloadable game. Comes up pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. John DeLancey of Q fame for you Star Trek people out there. And he's also in Breaking Bad, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is this narrator, mad scientist type guy. You are solving puzzles with various blocks that you can change the weight of.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hard to explain abstractly, but imagine if the companion cubes stayed with you all the time.
It does very much have a portal feel. You'll enter a room, it will refresh the whole experience. You're in a new puzzle.
Right.
Think about it, do it, move on to the next room.
Right.
It's going to be great.
Yeah,
I think
that's
undeniable.
Definitely. It's very solid, and the sense of humor is really there. Yeah. What else? What else are good things? I think we should mention Papa EO a little bit, just because it's one of the smaller games.
We were shown it by Stephanie Landry, who's the environment artist for Minority Inc., the creators of Papa EO. And this has received some good criticism because apparently it's about the lead designer's childhood in an allegorical sense.
Mm-hmm.
He had an alcoholic father and an abusive father, and the game very much addresses those issues in its design.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm absolutely looking forward to it. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday and some more today on the floor, but this is one of the reasons why I think Sony is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, this is a game about child abuse and alcoholism.
And not only that, it has kind of a, gosh, who's the director that did the fantasy film Pan's Labyrinth?
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, it has like a del Toro style vibe where like the monster is somewhat grotesque but also humanistic, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah.
And it's not on the nose by any means, and it doesn't have to be about that when you experience it, but it's undeniably a risk, and it's undeniably an independent and special game.
Right.
And I love that not only are they publishing it, period, but, you know, we asked Stephanie why they went with Sony.
Right.
And they were like, Sony was loving it, and they said, just do what you want.
Yeah.
And
they were like, Sony gave us money and didn't demand things from us.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Like, all right, well, you can't blame them for going with Sony then, because yeah. It's like, if you want that creative control, then, you know, there you have it.
Yeah, so I think that was great. That was really fun to look at. We also saw PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, the Super Smash Brothers of the Sony market.
Don't say that term inside the Sony booth. They'll give you some dirty, dirty looks.
Everyone knows it.
Yeah. Poppy Yo is pretty good, huh?
Poppy Yo is pretty good. I'm really excited for it.
They need something to pad out their lineup. So
yeah, and you know what? I think it's about time for a four player fighting game. I think that's great. But yeah.
But the Wii U we'll be playing the next Smash Brothers on Wii U, basically.
Yes, that's right.
Let's see. There's a couple other random things that we saw. We could talk about them more on another date. We saw a few more Wii U things. Wario had a WarioWare style game. Mm-hmm. We played the Rayman Legends demo, which played a lot better than it showed, I think.
Let's put a bookmark on that one, too, because I definitely want to talk about that in more than 1 minute length.
Yeah.
The same goes for Far Cry 3, what we saw of the co-op mission.
Right. Dust514, the shooter connected to EVE Online.
I was really stunned by how disappointed I was.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Again, it's hard to showcase. Yeah.
We didn't see anything very special about it. Like, what makes that game special is that it is connected to the craziest game in the world.
The problem is it feels like it's carrying over too much of that craziness. Like,
right.
It's hard to understand. The system menu, I noticed, has a lot of the same not very readable icons from EVE Online.
Yeah.
Like, the med packs and things like that look very similar. There's a ton of customization, which is great, but when the game comes to launch and you have new players who want to experience this game, that's not going to help them out much.
That's true.
I mean, it was confusing, and we had pre-built classes for us.
Right, right. We didn't have to do anything but get in there and start running and gunning.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, running and gunning, that's our theme for the show.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much, those are the highlights from day two. Obviously, we'll expand on things in the future. And we'll try to do a little bit more Nintendo stuff and a little bit more Sony stuff tomorrow, as well as some other things, possibly mm-hmm. Gorn-related. So you'll have that to look forward to tomorrow when we wrap everything up for day three.
Yeah, so, you know, thanks for listening. I know these are a little weird, a little rushed.
A little raw.
Well, they're definitely not the normative podcast that we do.
Right.
That being said, you know, I think we are getting at some really interesting things.
Hopefully, yeah. And you know, if there's stuff that, you know, if there's stuff that you're particularly interested in that we touched on, you know, feel free, obviously, send us emails. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And again, for more of our work, for more other people's works, experiencepoints.net, popmatters.com. We're not going to be giving you all the hottest scoops of E3, but there are some people who are writing really great stuff over there.
We will craft the best entrees of E3.
Yes, yes.
Okay, until tomorrow, everyone. Take it easy.
Au revoir.